he still gets mad pulse racing, although I do suspect the person who edited that video montage was probably British. I don't know why I just get that feeling. But it was a spectacular success, London 2012, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm delighted to say that we have today one of the greatest middle distance runners of all time, a three-time Olympic gold medalist, but more importantly for us, I suspect, the man who was the driving force behind London 2012. So please give a very warm welcome to Sebastian Lord Coe.
Less credible to think that it is only really 13 years ago that the three of us sat in a pub in West London thinking everything that you witnessed on that film a few minutes ago was worth going for. On the eve of the opening ceremony, that 13-year journey ended up with 8,500 people in an organising committee, 200,000 more people working across every operational area in London to make the Games a success, 70,000 volunteers on top of that. An economic entity that, as Stevie made, quite rightly made the point that during the last few years, these have been challenging times for pretty much every industrial sector. But this was an entity that put £6.5 billion into the British construction industry. Saw 19 million people involved in the largest cultural festival that this country's had since 1951. 20 million people coming out onto the streets, not just to celebrate the Olympic torch, but local contribution. Schools, hospitals, and sports venues in a transformed area of East London. The creation in 7 years, in what probably politicians would have taken 50 years to have developed, a new city inside an old city, and a completely transformed landscape. And I would love to be able to tell you that all that was written on the beer mat 13 years ago. Some of it was, but it is just also to say that this was not easy or soft pounding in the early days. When the International Olympic Committee, back in 2003, saw the list of runners and riders that were wanting to mount a bid to stage the Games, they immediately and instantly described it as the Great Race. Cities like Paris had staged the Games before, to go back a little way. Madrid, Moscow, New York, Paris, these were London, all cities that had actually staged Games in the past, but rarely have they come together in this kind of confusion. And the London story was a very delicate one to begin with. We slid across the line in 2004 as one of the five cities to make the cut. Nine started, Rio, Istanbul, Leipzig, and Havana didn't make the cut. But of the five cities, London was sitting probably in fourth place, marginally only ahead of Moscow, and certainly behind Paris, Madrid, and New York. And I recognized early on that the process of being able to challenge the United Kingdom to take this to their hearts was something that was going to take a little bit longer. There are, and you are all overtly commercial people in overtly commercial organisations, you will know that there are two standard questions that tend to get asked in the creation of an organisation, the how and the why. And my experience in the early days of London was that we were asking both those questions, but in the wrong order. And don't get me wrong, I certainly don't for 1 minute, given the 7-year journey that we've just been on, dismiss the how. If my senior team is standing here, they would probably contextualize the Games in any number of ways. My very talented chief executive, Paul Dighton, who came to us from Goldman Sachs in 2005, timing is a wonderful thing, would probably tell you that this is the only organization that he has ever worked in that doubles its numbers every year. You start off with a big organization of 60 people. You end up in 7 years' time with 8,500 people. You double your numbers. And if my HR director was standing here, she would probably say, yes, that's a very interesting process and a massive piece of HR. But at the end of that journey, we then, over the final year, have to meld into those professional teams 70,000 volunteers. My goodness, what an impact the Games makers ultimately made, both on the United Kingdom, the delivery of the Games, and the way we actually realigned many of the perceptions about the UK. If my commercial director was standing here, he would probably say to you, it's the only organisation that he's ever been involved in that started with a £2 billion deficit and slowly work back to a balanced budget by the selling of merchandise, marketing, license, bringing our sponsors to the table, selling our television rights. our marketing director would say, well, that's of course very interesting, but think about my task. It's to take the world's most recognisable brand, to sell it, to protect it, to legislate for it. The act of government bill has to be passed in order to protect all the rights around it, to merchandise, to market, to license, and then to hand on to the next city in better shape than you take it over. And my security director, to this very day, Sir Ian Johnson, the former head of the British Transport Police, probably thinks that over 7 years he's been through the biggest security conference with a little bit of sporting overlay dotted around the city. You can see that these are probably the most challenging set of management principles and certainly the most challenging project management that any city undertakes in its normal daily lives. And for me, of course, this will always be about sport. I will always contextualise this, what I do is my background. I will, of course, contextualise this through the sporting metric. And let me just put that into perspective. In a couple of days' time, I go to my board meetings in Monaco, just down the coast, to the headquarters of the International Track and Field Federation. Every 2 or 3 years, we hand to a city a world championship. In London, in 2017, they will arrive in the new Olympic Stadium. We give every city 5 years to deliver one world championship. In fairness, track and field is quite complicated. 40 different disciplines, male and female, road closures, marathons, discus. It's a fairly complicated 10-day process. But I have to say that it is in the foothills compared to the 7 years that the International Olympic Committee gives one city not to deliver one world championship, but 26 simultaneous world championships. Because there are male and female events at any one of those disciplines, that's just over 50 world championships. And we do that all in 14 days. And then we take a 10-day breather, and my teams always smile, because that means working day and night, to reconfigure city from an Olympic into a Paralympic city with all the accessibility and the different service levels that you need to create, and then to do pretty much the same with 40 Paralympic World Championships. And all this takes place over 26 or 27 days. And if you had those similar sporting events on a day-by-day basis, in other words, the construct that you need to create the gold, silver, and bronze medal position, you would have not 14 Olympic days of sport, you would have 461. 2,000 different sessions, 64 days of work, and 64 weeks of sport. And we collapse all that into that space. So the complexity of this project, and I've only touched on a sliver of it. I have begun to think about and describe the transportation, the city operations, the 200,000 hours of testing of IT systems, the security, testing of over 150 different venues, only 35 of them in sport, and testing, obsessional eye in detail is what you witnessed last year. The witness was simple. It was about the most robust, secure relationships that you could possibly create. But if I go back to 2005, we had effectively asked ourselves the question, how? And we roughly knew how we would do it. But the question that we hadn't asked ourselves was why? And that probably accounted for the fact that at that stage, we only had a 20% approval rating in the United Kingdom for this project. And the killer supplementary question that if we'd asked at the time, and we did, but we didn't publicise, was yes, but those that think that this is worth going for, how many of you think we're going to win, was virtually off the graph. I used to talk about the passion in British sport for the Olympic Games by saying that this was the fourth time in 20 years that we bid for a Games, rather glossing over the fact that on those three previous occasions, we probably only aggregated 24, 25 votes out of a possible 500 or 600 available to us. Our track record was not a particularly good one. Our teams, when I arrived in the organising committee, consult the bid team, rather thought there was probably likely to be a preordained outcome that we would somehow make a pretty worthy attempt at rescuing and winning the right to stage these games. But as is probably the case, we'd have gone out to Germany on penalties in the semi-final. There was this view that somehow there was a preordained outcome. And we started on a very interesting process. We started to ask ourselves, me included, why were we doing this, not just how. And the why was very important. Why were people prepared to leave sweet spots in their career, to come to a project with no certainty of outcome? In fact, if you looked at the track record, probably the odds stacked against London winning that. Coming to a project where we were some distance behind the key runners and riders in the rest of the field, why were people prepared to come to a project where they knew that they weren't going to be paid as much as they were from their other areas of activity? Why were they going to allow weekends and weekdays all to meld into one and walk away from families and friends and relationships for that length of time? And this was a long and tough process. I locked the teams away for nearly 2 weeks. And until we were able to articulate internally why we were doing this, I didn't believe that we would possibly make the kind of progress that we subsequently did. Once, of course, we'd settled upon the vision, it was very clear and it was unambiguous. I couldn't see in my lifetime a better vehicle for changing public attitudes to sport, health and related fitness. I couldn't see a vehicle in my lifetime that would inspire and encourage more young people to take up sport. And that was the vision that we took. Of course, in hindsight, the vision was at its most crucial when we were delivering the games. Those crossroads that you regularly meet in any organization, that alignment of budget and creativity, and the siren voice so often punctuating and puncturing a debate around the table, sometimes mine, sometimes from other functional areas. Guys, what is it that we said we would do? Well, let's do it. Two of the key decisions that we took were driven by the vision. Vision in the delivery. The pixels, those great scenes that you saw in the stadium where suddenly the whole stadium became an ocean, or Jesse Owens was running around through the crowd. That was a decision that we had to make nearly 6 months out. Should we do that? They were expensive, relatively expensive to do. And again, a voice around the table saying, guys, we promised to deliver the best spectator experience of any games. That is part of the vision. Life sites, another big issue. Again, when you're a cash-strapped organization, the challenges are always towards the end of the project. Mercifully, again, a siren voice around the table. We talked about educating young people to take up those sports in city centres. That's what we said, that's what we would do, and that's what we delivered. So the vision, in hindsight, was far more important in what you witnessed last year in London than it was getting through a difficult, sweaty election in Singapore 7 years earlier. Coming out 4 votes ahead. It's the road start, it's the route map, it's the way that you deliver on a day by day, hour by hour, and when you get close to the field of play and the competition on a minute by minute basis.